Okay, well, we're going to Daniel chapter 6 tonight. We saw the fall of Babylon and mentioned the different theories of how it fell. The predominant one is that they blocked the river and of Euphrates and it dried up, and then they went through the river gates and snuck in, and while the Babylonians were partying and drunk, they took over the city and took over the empire. But this is the advent of the second empire or kingdom that is talked about in Nebuchadnezzar's dream. It's the silver empire or the silver kingdom. The first was gold, and that was Nebuchadnezzar, and the second was the silver kingdom. So we saw that Belshazzar mocked God by using the temple vessels to drink wine and celebrate and worship the false gods. And so Daniel had already revealed years before that Babylon would fall when he revealed the prayer, or when he revealed the dream to Nebuchadnezzar, when he interpreted the dream for him, and that it would fall and another kingdom would rise up. During Daniel's time, his life, from a young man, or actually a young boy, to being an old man, he served at least four monarchs that are named. Now, there are others in between, so I guess he served them too. We don't know. But he served Nebuchadnezzar, and then he served Belshazzar, and he served Nebuchadnezzar for 40 years, about. So that's a long time. Belshazzar, who didn't last too long, Darius the Mede, and finally Cyrus the Persian. And at the time of chapter 6, Daniel is in his 80s. So we're going to start off verse 1. And remember, he's an old man at this point. He's been around for a long time. It says, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom. So as soon as Darius took over, what does he do? He reorganizes the administration of the kingdom. And he, because, you know, before Nebuchadnezzar had all these wise men and astrologers and different guys, and they would report to him, but he put Daniel over them, and he put the Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego in charge of the provinces of Babylon. So now we have a new administration, and he puts 120 princes over the whole kingdom, and over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give accounts unto them, and the king should have no damage. It's pretty smart. So Daniel was the chief president, similar to how Nebuchadnezzar had made him, put him in charge, made him master of the wise men. If you look back at chapter 5, verse 11, the queen came in, which was Belshazzar's grandmother, Nebuchadnezzar's wife, we believe. And she says, there is a man in the kingdom whom is the spirit of the holy gods, and in the days of thy father, which was his grandfather, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, was found in him, whom the king Nebuchadnezzar, thy father made master of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. And if we go back to chapter 2, verse 48, we actually see that. And it says, and the king, you know, after he told the king what his dream was and told him the interpretation, then the king made Daniel a great man and gave him many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. So he was the head guy under Nebuchadnezzar. Now here, he again is made and put in charge of all the administration of the whole empire or the whole realm. And Darius did this so he would have no damage, meaning, you know, he wouldn't have to look after everything himself. He could, you know, take a vacation, play golf, whatever he did. Verse 3, then this Daniel was preferred above the president's princes because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. So even more, you know, he's really running the show, kind of like Joseph did, right, in Egypt. He ran the whole show. And the only one he had to answer to was Pharaoh, and in this case, the only person that Daniel has to answer to is Darius. Is that outside here?
Yeah.
Oh, it's annoying.
Can you go kill it?
No, you want to close the door tight?
You're a stern book.
Thanks. I don't want to kill it. I just don't want to hear him yapping. Sorry, dog was barking outside. We had the door open a little bit. Okay. Then the princes, verse 4. Then the princes, the princes sought to find an occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom. But they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Pretty interesting. You know, these guys, okay, first of all, you have to understand something. So Darius comes in and he reorganizes and picks the 120 princes, and then he picks the three presidents, and then he puts Daniel in charge because he's got a reputation and people know who he is and what he did, and Darius sees that, and so he takes advantage of it. But this took time. It didn't just happen, you know, in one day or 2 weeks. It took some time. And so he's there, and as he's doing this and as he's operating, and these guys are getting jealous because he's one of the Jews that were taken captive, and they look down upon him. And so they try to find something wrong. They try to find a fault. They try to find an occasion. And they're not happy about it. Jealousy and politics are at work. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. Daniel probably would not play ball with the other politicians and bureaucrats. In other words, the bigger a government, the more bureaucratic the government, the more autocratic the government, the more corruption it usually is, the more corrupt it usually is. I mean, that's just the way it works. And you go through history and you'll find that every time that is the case. It's always the bigger it gets, the more corrupt it will get. And apparently Daniel was not one of those guys that would, you know, take bribes or gifts or any of that stuff. The NIV says in verse 4, they could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Yeah, he just wasn't. So, verse 5, then said these men, we shall not find an occasion against this Daniel except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. You know, they had to figure out a way to get at him. But Daniel was so precise in his work, so conscientious, so honest, they couldn't find anything wrong. So they said, well, we'll have to figure out something. We'll have to manipulate. We'll have to figure out. So they're conspiring, right? They're conspiring. So let's see. Somewhere between 5 and 6, these men spied on Daniel, conspired against Daniel to get rid of him. What we see in the couple of verses that follow have taken a bit of time and planning. So, verse 6 says, then these princes assembled together to the king and said unto him, King Darius live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes, the counselors, and the captains have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Okay, they are lying, aren't they? Because they say all the presidents, and Daniel's one of the presidents, and he didn't agree to this because they did it on the sly to try to get at him. Now, a little side note, I read, and I don't know if this is true, but in chapter whatever it was, 4, when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego get thrown into the fiery furnace, that was, you know, the Babylonians' way of capital punishment. But it was not the Persians, because the Persians worship the sun god and the fire god. So they wouldn't do that. So they threw him to the lions. Just a little side note. Anyway, now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. So these men do lie, and they say all, and it wasn't. And here we see a difference between Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom and the Medes and the Persians. In Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom, in the kingdom of Babylon, whatever Nebuchadnezzar said, or Belshazzar who followed, that was the law. And if he wanted to change it on a whim, he could change it. He could do whatever he want. Remember back in chapter 5, if you go back there, verses 18 and 19, where Daniel's talking to Belshazzar, and you know, he offered him gifts, and he says, I don't want any gifts. And then he says in verse 18, O thou king, the most high God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom and a majesty and a glory and honor. And for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, languages trembled and feared before him whom he would slew, whom he would keep alive, whom he would he slew, and whom he would he kept alive, and whom he would set up, and whom he would put down. You know, whatever he decided to do, that's what he did. And he didn't need to have a reason, he didn't have to have a law, he just did what he wanted. If he wanted to kill you, he killed you. Mm-hmm. If he wanted to keep you alive, he kept you alive. If he wanted to promote you, he promoted you. And he promoted Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So that's who he did. But here in chapter 6, it says, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. Wherefore King Darius signed the writing and the decree. So once that writing was signed, it could not be altered or changed. Hold your place here and go to Esther. Esther chapter 1. Right before Job, I believe. Mm-hmm. Of course, we know Esther was a queen in the Persian Empire. Her husband was Artaxerxes. Another one of these guys, great name. And in verse 19, talking here, it says, if it please the king, let there go a royal commandment from him, and let it be written among the laws of the Persians and the Medes, that it be not altered, that Vashti come no more before the king Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal estate unto another that is better than she. And that was, you know, the king's. Vashti was one of his queens. So here again, he signed the law. It couldn't be altered once he signed it into law. Back to Daniel. So that's an interesting thing. So a decree, once it's signed, it would be published. You know, they would publish it. They would make copies and they would send messengers out around the kingdom to announce it. And then they would put it up on the city gates and public places so that everybody knew the decree, so they could read it and they could obey it. So that's what they did. Verse 10. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. Aforetime means he's doing this all the time. This is his mode of life. This is his routine. This is what he does. He did what he always did. He found out about the decree and, you know, to ask, you know, you weren't to ask any petition of any man save the king for 30 days. Well, petitions, when you pray, one of the things you do when you pray is you ask petitions, right? So that would include prayer. So Daniel did what he always did according to what he knew was right. And it seems to be that there's no law. You know, we learned about hours of prayer years ago. It talks about our hours of prayer in Acts when they would go to the temple. And it doesn't seem to be a law, but it seemed to be a custom. So if you hold your place here and go to 1 Kings chapter 8, Saul's prayer at the dedication of the temple, verse 29. It says, that thine eyes may be opened toward this house night and day, even toward the place of which thou hast said, my name shall be there, that thou mayest hearken unto the prayer which thy servant shall make toward this place, which was the temple. He was dedicating the temple at this time. And hearken thou to the supplication of thy servant and of thy people Israel when they shall pray toward this place. So no matter where you were in Israel or Jerusalem, if you were going to pray, you would pray towards the temple. You know, today Muslims will face Mecca, right? Wherever they are in the world, whatever direction Mecca is, which really, you know, the earth is round, so wherever, which way you're facing, eventually you're going to be facing it, but you know, that's what they would do. Let's go to Psalm 5. Psalm 5. See, it wasn't a law. It's not written in Leviticus or Deuteronomy or in there anywhere, but it seemed to be that this is what the people did. This was a custom or the way they did, and it was pretty well established. In Psalm 5, verse 7, it says, this is Psalm of David. Psalm of David, and he says, but as for me, I will come into thy house in the multitude of thy mercy, and in thy fear will I worship toward thy holy temple. There he goes. Psalm 28, verse 2. Hear the voice of my supplications when I cry unto thee, when I lift up my hands toward thy holy oracle. Holy oracle would be the temple, the place where the word is. And then in Psalm 138, which you all will recognize when we read it, Psalm 138, verse 2, it says, I will worship toward thy holy temple and praise thy name for thy loving kindness and for thy truth, for thou hast magnified thy word above all thy name. I will worship toward thy holy temple. So you didn't have to be in the temple to worship God, but they would face toward where they believed God resided. You know, that was where they made the temple for him to reside, and he came down into the Holy of Holies to meet Solomon when he dedicated the temple, and he was there. One other one, Jonah. Got to find Jonah. Daniel. Hosea, Amos, something, Joel.
Obadiah.
I passed it. I can never find it. There we go. Jonah, chapter 2, verse 4. This is, he's in the fish's belly, and he cries out, verse 4. Then I said, I am cast out of thy sight, yet I will look again toward thy holy temple. So it was a big deal for them to look towards the temple, and Daniel did that. And apparently he did it 3 times a day. 3 times a day. So they're watching him, and it says in verse 11, then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before God. So he's praying towards the temple as he did aforetime. It was, you know, it wasn't hard for them to figure it out because he was a pretty regimented, disciplined guy. And he said he did it aforetime. He was he was reliable in his routines. So they caught him. It says in verse 11, then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. You know, and if he did it 3 times every day and they watched him a couple of days, he didn't break the law once. He broke the law numerous times. So they really were loaded with ammunition. This is what the conspiracies, you know, the conspirators, they had to have their evidence, right? They had to document it. So I'm sure they had as many witnesses as they could to say, yes, Daniel did this. Verse 12. Then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. Hast thou not signed a decree that every man that shall ask a petition of any god or man within 30 days, save O thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, the thing is true according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which altereth not. Again, it alters not. These men, you know, they weren't stupid. They were sly. They were subtle, like the serpent. And they reminded the king of the law. They didn't just accuse him. They said, didn't you sign this law? You know, you signed this law, and you agreed to it, and the law doesn't alter once you do it, and this guy's breaking the law. And you agreed, king. So let's see. Verse 13. Then answered they and said before the king, that Daniel, which is of the children of the captivity of Judah, regardeth not thee, O king, nor the decree that thou hast signed, but maketh his petition 3 times a day. He just didn't make a mistake and forget, king. He's putting it right in your face and he's mocking you. He's doing it every day, 3 times a day. He doesn't care what you say. Right? Okay. Then the king, verse 14. Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased, means very, with himself, and he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Darius realized that he had been tricked. He realized what these guys had done, and he realized that once he had signed it, the law, it wasn't reversible. And he spent all day and all night looking for a loophole.
Yeah.
That's what he was doing. He was trying to figure out a way to deliver them, to deliver, to have a loophole. Then these men assembled unto the king and said unto the king, "Know, O king, that the law of the Medes and the Persian is that no decree nor statute which the king establisheth may be changed." So then they come back to him because, you know, the king didn't throw Daniel into the lion's den immediately. They come to him and they say, you know, we came, we accused, we had the evidence, we proved it. You signed the law and you can't go back on it. You can't change it. Then the king commanded and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, "Thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee." Hmm. Wow.
Even Darius knew that.
You know, what a cool guy. He saw Darius. He saw what kind of man Daniel was. He said, "That's the God you serve continually. You don't, you know, you don't ever let up. You're faithful as the day is long, and God's going to deliver you." And a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that the purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel. So, you know, they take a big stone and they close it up and they put wax around it. You know, they melt wax around the edges, and then he puts a signet on it. I mean, this is sealed by the king, and nobody can break that seal. So, pretty crazy. And the purpose could not be changed concerning Daniel. So, Daniel is in the lion's den. Then the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting. Neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. So obviously Darius is very upset because he can't sleep. He's not having the dancing girls come in and the musicians, and he's not eating. He's really upset because he doesn't want Daniel to die, because he's the guy that runs the kingdom and he's the one he can depend on. He's the one that's not corrupt. He's the one that's not going to cheat or steal. And he's the one that will do what he's supposed to do. Then the king, verse 19, then the king rose very early the next morning and went in haste unto the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. Lamentable means a grievous or mournful voice. Oh, Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, "Oh, Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions?" I don't know if he half believed it, right? I mean, it's lamentable. He's grieving. He's mourning. He's sad. You know, he was up all night. Then said Daniel unto the king, "O king, live forever." I bet he was happy, upbeat, relaxed. "O king, live forever. My God hath sent his angel and hath shut the lions' mouths, that they have not hurt me, for as much as before him innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O king, I have done no hurt." And so Daniel says, you know, God sent his angel, and, you know, because I'm innocent, I didn't do anything wrong. I've done nothing to hurt you, king. I served you faithfully and do my best, and I'm still alive. What a cool thing. What a great witness for God. And for a man to be faithful like that. And, you know, we see a couple of places where he really does stuff and believe, but there were years where, you know, he just went along and did his routine life. He just did what he was supposed to do. He did the administration of his job. He watched over the kingdom, and he served all these different kings, and he had to go, you know, whichever they, the way the wind was blowing, as far as, you know, the different way these guys operated and their personalities and everything else. And yet, here he was just plugging along, faithful, every day, three times a day, praying to his God and then going to work and doing everything he's supposed to do, being honest and faithful to whoever's in charge. What a great thing. Then was the king exceeding glad. He was exceeding glad. He was ecstatic for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no means of hurt was found upon him because he believed in his God. He believed in his God. Now, you know, I noticed something. You know, when they wrote this decree, it says that we will establish a royal statute and make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a position of any god or man for 30 days save thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. It doesn't say that he has to die. So he got thrown in and he didn't die. So then the king could let him out. Right? Yes. He spent a night with the lions and got along with them, okay, and everything was hunky-dory. You know, it's kind of funny. Anyway. Verse 24. Oh, you know what? We're here. It says he believed his God. Let's go to Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11 is that great chapter about great believers through the Old Testament. And it says, you know, great stuff about Abraham by faith, by Sarah by faith, Moses by faith, so on and so forth. And in verse 33, verse 32. And what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon, you know, the Old Testament judge, of Barak, another Old Testament judge, of Samson, of Jephthah, of David, and Samuel, and of the prophets. Daniel was a prophet who through faith or believing subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions. And then it talks about quench the violence of fire. That would be Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But, you know, Daniel didn't necessarily subdue a kingdom, but he ran the kingdom because of his faithfulness. And he was righteous. He lived a righteous life. And he obtained the promise. He obtained the promise of, you know, God told him what he would do and how he would bless him, and he protected him and took care of him and all those things. And then shut the mouths of lions, or stop the mouths of lions. So, you know, pretty cool. So back to Daniel 6. So because he believed his God, and the king commanded, and they brought those men which had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives. And the lions had mastery of them and break all their bones in pieces or ever they came at the bottom of the den. So, I guess when they broke their bones, they ate them. Because that's what lions do. That's kind of what they're made to do. So, they tricked the king. They tried to kill God's man, and they paid a really severe consequence, didn't they? Yeah. Not only did they pay a consequence, but their families, their wives, and their children. So that was a pretty heavy price. For their jealousy. Their jealousy took them to a place where, you know, they didn't want to be. So... Verse 25, then King Darius wrote unto all the people, nations and languages that dwell in all the earth, which is a figure of speech. It means, you know, the whole realm, which they were it. They were the most powerful nation in the world. And as far as, you know, the known civilized world, that's who he was writing to. And so he wrote unto all these people. He says, peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and steadfast forever, and his kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion there shall be even unto the end. You know, it's very similar to what happened with Nebuchadnezzar. You know, and the cool thing is that Daniel, you know, whenever these things happen with Daniel, God always gets the glory. You know, God got the glory, not Daniel. Daniel didn't, you know, when Belshazzar offered him jewels and fine clothes and stuff, he said, I don't want that stuff. You know, but they would promote him, and he was put in charge of stuff because of his faithfulness, because he stood for God and did what he was supposed to do. But God always got the glory, and he was faithful. He served God continually. So he says, let's read that again. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and steadfast forever. And his kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end, which is true. He delivereth and rescueth. And he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in earth, who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. And again, that's true. You know, that's true. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Woohoo! And we still have a little time left. So we're going to talk about Cyrus a little bit. So we talked a little bit. Nobody really knows exactly the relationships, but we believe that Darius was a Mede, Cyrus was a Persian, Cyrus was the big Mahatma, and then he made Daniel, or he made Darius the king over Babylon. But, you know, they were related somehow or another, by blood, by royal blood. And Cyrus was an amazing man, and he's prophesied of by name by God. So let's go to Isaiah. Isaiah 44. Isaiah 44 and verse 28, which I think is the last verse of the chapter. We could read other because it's kind of cool. Well, this is, you know, God is just reproving Israel. La, 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 la. Let's start in verse 24. Thus saith the Lord, thy Redeemer, and he that formed thee from the womb, I am the Lord that maketh all things, that stretcheth forth the heavens alone, that spreadeth abroad the earth by myself, that frustrateth the tokens of the liars, and maketh diviners mad, that turneth wise men backward, and maketh their knowledge foolish, That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That confirmeth the word of his servant and performeth the counsel of his messengers. That saith to Jerusalem, thou shalt be inhabited, and to the cities of Judah ye shall be built, and I will raise up the decayed places thereof. That saith to the deep, be dry, and I will dry up the thy rivers. That saith of Cyrus, he is my shepherd, and shall perform all my pleasure, even saying to Jerusalem, thou shalt be built, and to the temple thy foundation shall be laid. Now this is about over 150 years before Cyrus exists. Okay? Thus saith the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden to subdue nations before him, I will loose the loins of kings to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut. And if you remember, when we read the description of Babylon, they had brass gates that were like leaves, the leaved gates. Right? That's what they were. I will go before thee. I will make the crooked places straight. I will break in pieces the gates of brass and cut in sunder the bars of iron. And those leaved gates were made of brass. I will give thee the treasures of darkness and the hidden riches of the secret places, that thou mayest know that I, the Lord, which call thee by thy name, am the God of Israel. For Jacob my servant's sake, and Israel mine elect, I have even called thee by thy name. I have surnamed thee, though thou hast not known me. I am the Lord, and there is none else. There is no God beside me. I girded thee, though thou hast not known me. Wow, isn't that something? That's what God said concerning Cyrus. He called him and gave him a name. This prophecy takes place over 150 years before Babylon and Daniel and Cyrus took it over. You know, and if you read in Jeremiah, one of the things that Jeremiah, one of the reasons he got in trouble with Jehoiakim and Jehoiakim is because he kept saying, well, look, you need to go on and go to Babylon like you're told, because God wants you there, you know. And they didn't like him prophesying that they should go and put themselves in captivity. But he kept telling them that. Now, we're not going to get into chapter 7 tonight, but the next chapter 7 is not in chronological order of Daniel. Sorry. Back in Daniel. It goes back to the first year of King Belshazzar as king. And the ensuing chapters are concerned with visions and prophecies that Daniel has and his understanding, not with historical or political events. Okay? Chapter 2. Okay, why is Cyrus important? And is, you know, if you go back to Nehemiah and Ezra, it was Cyrus that sent him back to rebuild the temple and rebuild the city. Okay, but chapter 2 marked the beginning of the times of the Gentiles. Nebuchadnezzar had the dream about the image with the gold head and the silver shoulders and chest and arms, and the brass midsection and the iron legs, and then the feet with iron and clay mingled, okay? And then he says it's the four empires that will succeed you, and then there will be a stone cut out without hands, and it will crush all these, and that's referring to the Christ, the coming Christ, okay? But Cyrus sent them back, so, well, let's see. the visions and the prophecies deal with the end of the dominion of the Gentiles. That's what they deal with. So that's what we'll look at in chapter 7. But what's the significance of Cyrus, and why did they have to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem? There's no longer a legitimate king on the throne of Israel. The rule of Israel is done with the Babylonian captivity. And so chapter 2 marks the beginning of the times of the Gentiles. And it talks about the great Gentile nations and rulers and stuff. But the Christ still hadn't come, had he? And at the time of Daniel, the Old Testament prophets did not know everything that was going to happen. They did know that the Messiah would come. Isaiah prophesied of his being crucified or being, you know, killed and all this stuff. But he had to have some place to come back to in Israel. And the temple had to be there because he had to offer himself in the temple to pay the price to be the final sacrifice, because after his resurrection, that's where he had to go to present himself before God. So Cyrus is so important because he's the one that made that decision to send those people back to Jerusalem to rebuild. So that's the significance of that. So I think that's where we're going to stop tonight, and we'll get into chapter 7, and hopefully we'll make sense of it. Okay? But, you know, you have to remember the whole subject of God's word from Genesis 3:15 on is Jesus Christ, and it has to fit in. He is the stone that was cut without hands in Daniel. And you know, and Daniel foretells of the final kingdom of Christ, but he didn't know the stuff in between. So, okay? So, Father God, we thank you for this night. We thank you for loving us and blessing us, for keeping us safe. We thank you for what a great God you are and how much you love us and take care of us and watch over us. We thank you for the great example of Daniel and the great things that you show us in your word, how incredibly beautiful and perfect they are and how they always make sense when we understand them. And we just thank you for opening the eyes of our understanding so that we can better understand and the beautiful example of how faithful and true Daniel was in his life, and how even though the situations may have looked really not good at all, he just stood faithful, and every time you blessed him and promoted him and took care of him. And what a great example that is to us. So we just thank you for that. In the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, amen.